This Walking in Soundfields project came out, well, I guess it followed on from a show that I did last year, which really wanted to look at using sculpture as kind of like a musical notation. So using sculpture to then eventually develop a soundscape. The idea behind this was to build out sculptural objects like the ones you see behind you, and then use their material qualities to then interpret that into sound. So things like whether there's like the yellow objects over there, whether they're kind of angular or sharp, the smoothness of the surface, and things like obviously the colour of the object. So things like, because I've kind of focused on colour for this particular show, there's things like, like an acid yellow, for me, I think of as, if I was interpreting that as sound, it would be sharp, it would be high-pitched, and perhaps a warm yellow would have kind of perhaps a lower tone, kind of warm and fuzzy, and things like the sun. And in contrast, things like blue, a mid-blue would have a mellow sound, which can then be changed when you change the tone. So if you think about a mid-blue, you mix a little bit of black and a whole lot of white, and it becomes like a grey-blue, and then that would have a different sound to it. So it might be, it might remind me of things like a landscape. An icy landscape, and the sound would be maybe like a whistling wind, kind of fairly inhospitable maybe. So so that was kind of my method for then translating these objects into sound. You would have noticed that I've referenced Kandinsky. Yeah, I was reading Kandinsky's Concerning the Spiritual in Art, which is quite a short book and a pretty crazy book, worth a read. In that Kandinsky had his own theories of colour and probably more music than sound. He claimed that he had he experienced synesthesia, so he, as he was painting his colours, he said that he heard music, and I would say that influenced his theories of this. So he had these ideas about, he always kind of gave colours personalities. So I don't know if you've heard the animation one. He had ideas about yellow being an aggressive colour, and when it started leaning towards green, then it sort of took on the character of like raving lunacy. Same with blue, he thought of it as being more mellow, and then when it gets deep it becomes quite inhumane, and yeah, so I had some crazy ideas with this. And in addition to the sound, he also thought that different colours had movement as well. So yellow, he felt, came towards the viewer and kind of pushed out of its boundaries, whereas blue receded from the viewer and kind of slowly imploded in on itself. So it's kind of like if you've studied a little bit of painting, you know that, you know, you put blue in shadows and it kind of recedes. So kind of that sort of stuff makes sense. I found this book quite kind of compelling, so I thought I'd draw on some of his ideas and then bring in some of my own completely subjective theories on colour and sound and object and sound. So I decided to experiment more with it and build out these little sculptural compositions. I didn't want it to be too kind of over-intellectual, too theorised, because I felt it was more about the experience than kind of serious theory. It's not supposed to be a super serious work. And it kind of reminded me of, there was a story of Kandinsky struggling over one of his composition paintings, which was focused on blue, and he was thinking about, you know, the theory all behind it, and a friend told him to stop over into naturalizing. And he spent the rest of his time painting this blue composition, just repeating the word blue, 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 just focusing on it. So I thought, yeah, it's just about the experience, just focus on the simple thing, this kind of key primary element of art, and just experience it. So I guess that's a bit of a kind of background to it. In terms of process, because some people have asked me about kind of what comes first in terms of interactive video versus the sculptural ones. For this work, I started with the physical, the real objects, and started building out the objects first, and then arranging them in their compositional fields. And it's not really until they're pretty much locked down and finalised that I then build them into the interactive video. So yeah, so for that one, for the interactive video, it was a matter of replicating, modelling all the physical objects in virtual space. And then obviously making the sounds. So I kind of made the sounds in isolation in a way, like thinking about yellow and sharp yellow and these particular yellow objects, and I'll go away and make individual sounds to attach to those objects. And I guess that kind of introduces an element of chance into the work, which I quite like. The idea that you're making these individual sounds, but you actually really don't know how they're going to go once they're all put together. So yeah, I found that quite appealing, that kind of randomness in a way. And as well, because it's interactive, the idea that the viewer becomes a kind of performer. When they enter into the virtual space, then they're kind of in control of the soundscape, and also the volume of the soundscape and individual sounds. So yeah, that was kind of an important aspect for me in the work. I guess, yeah, the other thing, I guess the other main component is, of course, the animation work. When I was reading the Kandinsky book, I kind of visualised something very kind of similar to this as I was reading it. There was just some, yeah, fabulous quotes in there that I just had to use. And yeah, again, it's not supposed to be kind of super theoretical. It's just, I guess, bringing out some of the... I'm sure Kandinsky wasn't trying to be funny because he's really earnest in his writings. But I just found it as a good opportunity to really focus on each of these colours in constructing green, and hopefully give a kind of intense colour experience as you're listening to the profound words. So I think that's kind of my overview. Did anyone have any questions?
One question.
Yeah.
How did you, I don't know what you're talking about, but if he has one interpretation of colour, how are you, are you influenced by that, or do you sometimes, did you have a different interpretation of colour?
Yeah, well, it was actually, there was kind of a fair bit of consistency with Kandinsky's view. So, I mean, I think a lot of people will understand that, you know, some of the kind of really sharp yellow colours, it kind of makes sense that from a sound perspective that they would tend to be quite high-pitched. So it kind of is logical, I think, to some extent. And I guess... So I've kind of adopted those ones that were consistent with my own thinking, and then if I had my own particular thoughts on a colour than that, then I would just use that. So in one of the composite fields, the one with the multiple colours, I really just went out and thought about, you know, red, what do I think red would be if it was a sound. So I didn't actually say reference Kandinsky for that one. So a lot of it's kind of my subjective experience of it. And there's the same with the actual form of the objects as well. Say for the blue field, when I was thinking about the colour blue, I was kind of thinking about a low pitched, not quite a booming sound, but kind of along those lines. And for some reason, and I kind of went with it, in terms of its form, I was actually thinking about, there was these, I don't even know what they're called, they're like sound magnifiers that were used a little bit, I think in the Second World War on the coast of the UK, to magnify the sound of enemy warships or something like that. And they got these amazing structures with like concave surfaces on them. I don't think they work terribly well, but for some reason I just attached them with the colour blue. And so I kind of abstracted that idea and then did my own abstracted version of that. So it's kind of bringing a lot of my own kind of streams of consciousness or something.
They had the opposites of those, didn't they, as well? They had listening pieces in World War II that were these big, giant, like, trumpet-like sort of things where they could hear the planes.
So inefficient.
Still so low-fired. So when you talk about, like, sound and music, like, you're obviously thinking about pitch and tone and things like that. Like, is there an extension to which you actually start thinking about musical composition? Like, do you have a musical background where you're coming from, or is it just really that soundscape that you're thinking about?
Yeah, it's more soundscape. I used to play the flute, sort of classically trained. yeah, but because I was interested in this element of chance in the composition as well, I wanted to pick out these individual sounds, not thinking so much about an arrangement. I don't know how I'd actually go with that.
It's a strange story, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I actually haven't attempted that. It might actually be quite difficult. Yeah, but I like to have this kind of the composition to work itself out once it's on the interactive video.
Absolutely. Well, it's also not, I mean, it's almost a way of creating, writing a composition, isn't it? Like,
because
that's the starting board, and it's kind of a random chance creation.
Because this work, actually, when I was referring to the show I did last year, it was a show down at the Bayside, the gallery at Bayside in Brighton, and it was in response to the Percy Grainger collection from the Percy Grainger Museum. For those that don't know who Percy Grainger is, he's very, very eccentric, very talented pianist. That was kind of early 1900s, but he had these ideas about free music, experimental music, and he felt that this was actually the most valuable contribution he made, even though he wasn't recognised for it. So he had this idea that he wanted to come up with instruments that would kind of play music that had never been heard before, played sounds that had never been heard before. So he worked with a physicist friend to come up with these instruments to make, and they made terrible noises.
Sound that shouldn't have been made.
Yeah, you wouldn't even call it sound, like it was just terrible. But anyway, he was really interested in doing this. And also, I think he was also quite interested in the, you know, usually an audience would come to hear a performance and they're fairly passive in that role. So he wanted to kind of, in some respects, give it back to the audience that they could potentially perform that on these free music instruments. So that was when I started thinking about what other ways can you come up with unpredictable soundscapes or music. And because of coming from a sculpture background, I thought, might start with sculpture and start using that as notation and see where that goes. So yeah, so that was next step. This show is an extension of that. So it's a bigger scale and more complex.
With the multicolored one, could you talk about how you chose those colours? I'm really curious about your choice in colours.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something that you deliberate on much?
Yeah. There was. I actually made many more objects for that, and it was basically. I spent a long time just moving things around in a purely kind of formal compositional process of seeing kind of what works, what looks balanced, what looks interesting. Obviously working with three dimensions, working with height. So it wasn't kind of deep conceptual theoretical basis for it.
Yep.
it was just a lot of playing, really, which I think is kind of in keeping with the
change with element.
So I was quite. I did even the background. The background color with it. I changed that quite a lot until I was happy with the finish.
Yeah, and I also noticed that there's some that you've made high gloss and others that are matte and everything in between. So is that something that you're also thinking about when you're thinking in referencing sound and the colours and the shapes?
Yeah, so I thought, I noticed that the yellow field is all high gloss. So, I thought just kind of going with the sharpness. I always kind of visualise yellow as more of a shiny surface. Whereas the blue field is all matte and sort of highly pigmented. It was definitely a consideration.
So do you mix your colours then?
No.
I'm just thinking about the hard.
Oh, I do. I mean, in terms of mixing the ones on the composite, the multicoloured fields, most of those are mixed colours, but for the blue field, I actually used a professional spray acrylic,
okay,
which gives a really kind of smooth, really nice pigment, super pigmented.
Delicious. Wasn't what I was thinking. They are quite lolly like.
Just on a technical level, I really admire how smooth and nice it is. As someone who struggles with that kind of a care.
You struggle with that.
Well, it's not quite as. I did actually want it to be like super perfect.
Yeah.
Are they plaster or are they wood? Are they all mixed? You don't have to tell me, you don't have to.
No. No, that's fine. The spheres on the blue field and the more kind of pyramid-y type forms are all hydrostone plaster.
Yep.
So that gives a really nice finish. I work with hydrostone quite a lot. It's good. And the rest is pretty much either timber or MDF.
Okay. Yeah. Ruth might just have one more question.
I can't help. I have to say the yellow one. This all I can think of is the yellow peril.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Were you thinking about that? Did that come up at all?
Being
soft.
It did.
Sorry.
Well, it is sharp, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was conscious of that. I was hoping that I was kind of keeping away
actually there's one form that's probably could be a section of the yellow peril.
I just think because it's yellow.
Yeah.
I just think yellow. Anything yellow and sculpture.
It's yellow peril.
And flat surfaces.
I can't remember the peril.
It doesn't matter how much you try not.
All right, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you.